Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Are you struggling with weight loss? Scared of getting the shot? Golo is a better way to lose weight. No prescriptions or insurance required. Just take one Release supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. Golo's Release contains 7 natural plants and 3 key minerals to target body fat and combat the stress of dieting. Golo is clinically proven to work and safely and effectively controls sugar cravings and hunger while minimizing muscle loss, so you feel good and inspired to reach your goal weight. Stop going with the latest fad starvation diet. Stop depleting yourself and robbing your body of energy. Start living your best life today. Golo is effective and affordable, so before you consider drastic measures like the fad diets and new weight loss injections with potentially dangerous side effects, including significant muscle loss, learn more about Golo at Golo.com. Again, that's Golo.com. Join the 5 million who have already made the switch to Golo today. Visit Golo.com. That's Golo.com.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? This is Ben Golver with the Washington Post. I am joined on the other line by Michael the Pod Pina of Sports Illustrated. Michael, it kind of struck me this weekend. I feel like we might be in that scene in the war movies where it's just a little too quiet. It's just a little too eerie. So either we're about to get set up here to be completely bored out of our minds during this trade deadline, or maybe we are in that scene where we just don't know what's about to hit us yet. And this was striking me because I was writing my Washington Post newsletter on basically all the reasons why teams wouldn't want to be sellers, you know, possibly because of the expanded playoff format, giving a lot of teams that are losing right now still the opportunity to play for something, to get into that mix, possibly because, you know, a full-scale teardown doesn't really go as far as it used to because of the flattened lottery odds, because you have some really bunched-up races in both conferences. But that, it was just boring me out of my mind. I got to be honest, Michael. We need to find some way to have some action. So here's what we're going to do today. I'm going to make the case why a whole bunch of teams should trade pretty good players, and then you're going to tell me if I'm correct or if I'm crazy. You're going to be the judge, and then if there's malpractice and you don't do your job very well, we're going to let the Open Floor Globe be the judge on top of that. What do you think?
Love it. I'm ready to go.
Pretty simple concept here. We're going to go through, I think, some of the bigger names that have gotten discussion, and there are strong reasons why these guys shouldn't move, for sure. But I do think that we should kind of step back and look at where their organizations are and just have some honest, heartfelt conversations about what the direction is, and does this make sense to just hold tight or to really pursue, you know, a change of direction or change of course. So why don't we start with, I think, the name that has been out there for a while, a player who could actually, I think, alter the title chase. Tell me if you agree. Do you think Bradley Beal, if he landed on one of the top 6 contenders, could shake up that that landscape?
The NBA's leading scorer? Yeah, I do. I think he could shake things up.
So there you go. So let's talk about it. There should be interest from buyers, and we know who the general buyers are right now. Lakers, Clippers, Celtics, Nets, Bucks, 76ers. And I think you also have another tier of teams like Suns, Nuggets, and even Hawks, Mavericks, Knicks, where, you know, a few of those teams are in that title mix, but maybe not firmly so. So an addition could help them kind of solidify there. And a few others of those are probably just trying to improve their position in the standings, solidify a playoff spot, or just kind of look towards the future. So I see a lot of buyers. The problem is, do we have enough sellers? So let's start with Bradley Beal. The Washington Wizards, if they looked in the mirror honestly And they would say, look, we've been trying to avoid a rebuild for years. Where has that really gotten us? Yes, Bradley Beal has said he's happy here. Yes, he's made it very clear that he doesn't want to go anywhere else. Yes, he's become this pillar of the community, and he's talked about loving being kind of the face of a franchise, almost like a Damian Lillard. But what is the end goal? Where does that really get us? And if you're stuck with Russell Westbrook's contract for multiple more years after this, you've seen the results when they've played together. It's been not quite good, certainly not great, and it's probably going to get worse as you look forward. And you realize that players in this situation tend to have decreasing trade value the closer they get to the end of their contract. And Bradley Beal is pretty much playing the best basketball of his career, like you're describing, as the NBA scoring leader. This should be an opportunity where you could potentially be, you know, the belle of the ball. If you're trying to put out a piece like that, you should have lots and lots of offers and get a lot of trade interest. And yet it doesn't seem like that's been their philosophy. So I'm just kind of curious, if you've already locked in your organization as a franchise, realizing we have no chance to win a playoff series for the next 3 years because we've got this Westbrook contract and we're pretty much paralyzed by that. But we do have some young players coming up who could represent a next generation core, guys like a Rui Hachimura, a Denny Avdija. Is it now the time to kind of make that transition, sell at the peak moment for Bradley Beal, and then just try to imagine something different in the future, even if that means a little bit of pain here in the short term? I mean, what good does a 10 seed and a quick exit do for the Washington Wizards? It's pretty much as pointless as their trip down to the bubble when they, you know, finished in ninth and couldn't even force the play-in round. I mean, they're not going anywhere. They're not going to scare anybody in the first round. So shouldn't they unload Bradley Beal, set up an auction, and turn this from being a quiet trade deadline into a really interesting one?
I think they should, but just, you know, philosophically looking at it, for all the reasons you outlined, it would make sense to trade someone like Bradley Beal given his contract situation and the fear of losing him. But the reason why I don't think they...
Well, real quick, what about the fear of having him? This is kind of a fearful season for the Wizards, right? I mean, like, I understand, oh, there's this alternate universe where they don't have Beal, they're the worst team in the league. I get that. What are they really working with right now? Is it so great that we have to cling to this forever? I'm asking the question. I'm just, you know, this is more of a rhetorical device. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, they cling to this guy like he is a Lillard. But Lillard's leading the Blazers into the playoff chase, you know, game after game with clutch shots. That's been a stable organization in the playoffs every single year. You know, and obviously Beal has been dealt a very, very tough hand over the last 5 years. But should they have that mentality of, like, this guy's just untouchable, everything has got to revolve around him? I mean, it hasn't played out that way. He's not quite that caliber of a player.
I think I might be a little higher on him than you are. I mean, he's smack dab in the middle of his prime, 27 years old, just gets buckets like nobody's business. I mean, when you compare him to Dame or any of the other kind of homegrown talents in small markets or relatively small markets who stay put and are loyal, like, it's more on the Wizards organization than it is on Beal in terms of their struggles and not being able to really have an imprint in the playoffs. When they have gotten to the postseason, I think Beal has done a pretty good job of just acquitting his ability to compete at a high level in those situations. Like, if I'm the Wizards and this guy wants to stay, like, where do you go from here? I mean, the other big question is, like, what can you get for him? And so, you know, if I'm getting...
more than Drew Holiday, right? Like, whatever Drew Holiday returned for the Pelicans. You're definitely getting more than that. So we're talking multiple first-round picks going forward, probably with very limited protections. Maybe you can also snag a piece or two in the middle there as well. You're not getting the James Harden package, not quite, but somewhere in between Drew Holiday and James Harden. That's pretty good.
I mean, it would depend on, you know, obviously whose team, like, who's giving you those picks. If I'm Washington, though, like, I want a young player I can build around if I were to trade Brad Beal. That's why he's always connected to the Denver Nuggets and Michael Porter Jr. You know, the Miami Heat and Tyler Hero are an interesting alternative. But, like, if I'm not getting someone who's just solidified as a borderline all-star or someone who can be an all-star. You know, Jaylen Brown, Brandon Ingram, even like, honestly, the Minnesota Timberwolves and Anthony Edwards. If I could get that, I would be thrilled. But I don't think that any of those trades are possible. So, like, I'm fine holding on to Brad Beal. I'm fine re-signing him and hoping that the pieces below, the younger pieces on this organization, can kind of just steadily improve around. I mean, there's been flashes with some of the young guys that you've mentioned of someday being good. And I know that the Russell Westbrook contract really, really complicates this issue because, you know, Brad's going to be, what, 30 years old when Russell Westbrook's contract kind of comes off the books. But there's also an alternative where, or a situation where Russell Westbrook's contract kind of goes on the same path that we just saw with Blake Griffin, in which case you buy him out and you're kind of off that, don't have to really deal with all that money or just the way Russell Westbrook impacts a basketball team on the court. And maybe that would be a better situation for the Wizards and for Beal going forward. But I guess I'm just like, he's so good and he wants to be there, and trading players who are really good, who are not old, who want to be where you are, I don't really know what that says about your organization if you were to move on from it.
No, I hear you. Look, I think we've seen some flashes of Super Rui from Rui Hachimura. That's kind of a game changer for them, right? Like, if he really hits and became a player, then all of a sudden I think the arguments for trading Beal kind of go out the window because you're closer to having a core. The strongest argument to trade Beal is just if you don't trust any of those young guys. And Thomas Bryant, I mean, he's been injured this year. Definitely don't trust him as part of a core piece. Denny is just getting his feet wet in the NBA. And so I think maybe their plan is going to be, hey, let's just be patient, see if those guys do hit, and then we can go forward with a little bit more optimism next year. Westbrook's also been playing better himself here over the last month. One quick question on that. You know, I think if you and I had tried to grade the trade, the Westbrook Wall trade, in like early January, it would have been a smash success for the Houston Rockets, right? I mean, the Wizards were just falling to pieces. Westbrook was playing terribly. Now we go back, I'm pretty sure the Rockets have lost like 32 straight games. I mean, they're going absolutely nowhere. It's a complete disaster. Did Washington win this trade? Do we just need a little bit more patience? Did they win that trade, Michael?
I don't think either team won the trade. I'm not comfortable using the word win in describing that trade. I can't get there
team,
for either side.
Which team lost less, Michael?
I mean, I still like Houston for having the pick. But, I mean, Westbrook's just clearly been, a better basketball player than Wall has this season. There's no denying that. I mean, and that's really saying something just because, man, I just, there are so many stretches when I'm watching Westbrook, numbers aside, where he just doesn't look like an impact basketball player. And
not a positive impact basketball player, no. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very good of you to correct me.
Well,
there.
Is that another reason to do this trade, though? Because you're down a pick because of that Westbrook trade. Do you need to dig out from under that and get a few more assets? I'm just throwing out ideas here. I'm trying to sway your opinion, Michael. What do you think?
Again, like, it comes back to, what am I getting? Am I getting a pick that could be the number one overall pick in the draft? I'm not getting that pick because no team that's really bad is going to, I mean, short of like the Golden State Warriors giving me the Timberwolves pick, then I might be interested. Give me Wiggins in that. But I don't even think that they would have interest in that, to be honest with you, given Klay Thompson coming back next season and how good that they've looked overall as a team. So I need a really high pick. I need a blue chip piece to build around, who's just an obvious someone who's on an obvious all-star trajectory, and I don't know who's out there that can give me that.
Fair enough. So, final verdict from the judge, Pina, on the Bradley Beal trade idea. Are you saying thumbs up, the Wizards should try to trade him, or thumbs down, they just need to go forward with their same, you know, kind of blueprint of clinging to mediocrity?
Let's cling to me. I mean, when you put it that way, it's super just, I'm really excited about the future of the Washington Wizards.
Well, that doesn't have to be the official slogan. I'm just saying, like, you know, there's a ceiling with this group, I guess, is what I'm getting to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think both alternatives are pretty bad, to be honest with you. But I would hold on to Beal, so I'm going to give you a thumbs down.
All right, I'm 0-1. Well, let's switch it up. I'm going to win this one, Michael. Kyle Lowry has got to go from the Toronto Raptors. It's time. You know, they've had a really tough stretch here recently, but I am not basing this only on the most recent tough stretch. I am basing this on the idea that Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Philadelphia, and Miami are all definitely better than Toronto. Even if Toronto gets hot down the stretch somehow, even if they're able to kind of pull it all together, even if Pascal finally gets back to being Pascal and everything else, Toronto's not going to win a first-round playoff series this year, period. They're already in the backslide moment. And I think when you're in a situation like that and you've got Lowry coming up as a free agent, you're not necessarily in a position where you want to pay him because you've already made commitments to your future, Van Vliet, OG Anunoby, and Siakam. You've got your core guys. You know, the more you pay Lowry going forward, the less you can kind of pay for guys who are going to grow together with that group. And that's a pretty nice group. They've got a bright future together. Not a super bright future because they don't have a true franchise-level player, but a pretty nice core, right? So if he's not going to be part of your long-term plans, you cash out at the deadline. You get, if it's a pick or a player, whatever other matching salary you need to do, you have something to show for it. You do him a favor by letting him go compete for a title or at least have a playoff run with a team that's really going somewhere down the stretch of this season. And I also think if you're Toronto, making the play-in round doesn't mean nearly as much to them because they've been in the playoffs year after year compared to, like, say, New York or Chicago or Charlotte or even a Cleveland or these other teams that are potentially in the mix for that 9 and 10 spot in the Eastern Conference. Like, it's pointless. They've already been there and done that. There's no real reason to chase that, especially if you can kind of get some future assets. But I think the best reason why Toronto should trade Kyle Lowry is because Masai Ujiri wins every trade he participates in, Michael. This guy is just a trade monster. He thinks through every single possibility. He lines up great options. He knows when to strike. He's got great timing. And to me, this is the timing to go get some more assets, to just kind of, know when your time is up with this particular group. And if Masai wins a trade, he sets him up brilliantly for the next couple of years, then we're going to be right back where we've been with the Masai discourse over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, which is he's the best executive in the league. So what do you think? Are you ready to trade Kyle Lowry? And I should mention, I think he got ejected the other night. I'm not sure if that was a warranted ejection, but things are pretty, pretty dark right now with these Raptors. You know, they had stabilized for a little bit, but it's been a bunch of ugly losses recently.
No, I mean, you go to Raptors Twitter, scroll through it, and it's bleak. It's bleak right now. I am actually higher on Toronto than you are. And philosophically, I agree that re-signing a six-footer who turns 35 in 10 days is just not what you want in just about any circumstance. But I also think that the Raptors, when healthy, in a playoff series, are just not a team that anyone will want to mess with. Like, I'm not ruling them off at all. And I look
Michael,
at...
Michael, this group's going to be lucky to get one win in the first round. I mean, if it's five games, I'm impressed, you know. And that's if they even get there. They might not get there. There's a decent chance they don't even reach the real playoffs.
So the way I look at it is, like, I think when we get to the playoffs, so much of the regular season, thanks to health and safety protocols, will just be like instantly irrelevant. And I think that the Toronto Raptors, once we get to the playoffs, are one of the great test cases for this. Like, they haven't had OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, or Fred VanVleet in their starting lineup in like 3 weeks. So, like, right there, we're looking at this team, and yeah, they're struggling right now. Well, they're struggling because, like, their three best players or three of their four best players or whatever aren't available because of health and safety protocols, because of COVID. Like, I think that matters.
I agree. Let me say this. Full strength, though. I'm going to give you all those guys healthy, and I'm not going to trade Lowry. Who do they have the best chance to beat in the first round of those four teams I mentioned? Miami, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly. Do they match up well with anyone? Are they losing matchups in all four of those series? I think they do.
I can see them upsetting Philly. I can see them upsetting Milwaukee. I don't even, like, Miami's interesting just because, like, they're very up and down in a similar way to Toronto. They've been hot lately, though. I could see them being super competitive with Miami. I could see them being super competitive with Boston. I mean, thank you for just leaving Boston out of the conversation.
It's a top four conversation, not a top seven or nine conversation in the East. Have you seen Nick Nurse lately? I mean, I think some of my logic here, Michael, is he looks like he's running on fumes. Like, he's pretty frustrated. It could just be the injury issues and juggling lineups and, you know, them being down there in Tampa and all these other weird things that they've been dealt this year. It just, you know, I have this feeling in my gut like it's just not their year. No matter how hard they push, even if they try to get it together, the fully healthy, we're clicking Raptors, to me, it feels like a mirage. Maybe that's an emotional assessment, not a logical assessment, but you sound pretty convinced that they can still do some damage.
No, I mean, Nick Nurse should look super down and super defeated given everything that has happened to this organization all season. I mean, they're going through it harder than any other team given where they have to play.
When you have a tough week, Michael, don't you want to reward yourself with a nice takeout dinner? You know, I know you like to go to restaurants when you're able to, not during the pandemic once it's safe, but like, you like to reward yourself with a nice takeout dinner and kind of put the tough week behind you. That's the Kyle Lowry trade. Get yourself some juicy assets, you know?
Well, okay, so I don't know. Do you have anything more specific for me in this conversation? Because if I'm trading the best player in franchise history for, like, Tyrese Maxey, I'm sorry, that's just not... It's just not going to cut it.
You're going to be able to get more than that. Here's my idea. Basically, it's a scaled-down version of this Jrue Holiday trade, where the team that's going to be trading for Lowry, or similar to like a Chris Paul type situation, where you're trading for him with the intention, the wink, wink, nudge, nudge of, we're going to re-sign you, you're going to be our point guard next year, right? So I think that actually opens up a pretty interesting panel of teams. Like, you could have some teams that aren't necessarily playoff teams interested in grabbing him just so that they have a point guard for next season. Like, my dream one there, I've mentioned previously, would be the Chicago Bulls, because they just need a real point guard, right? And some stability. And I think they could make a real jump if they had him next season. But Philly gets thrown out there. I know the Clippers fans would just kill for him because they just lose another disgusting game on Sunday night, and they just cannot stop the ball no matter what. I don't know if they can actually. It's so bad, man. It's really bad. I hate being so right about the Clippers and rubbing it in your face constantly. you know, there's teams out there that could really use this guy, and I think you could get a little bit of a market going. Of course, you're not going to get that same Jrue Holiday price because you're only getting him for the half season, and he's a little bit older and doesn't quite have the same, I guess, you know, value in a vacuum. But there should be a market there, and I would certainly explore it. So, can I get a final thumbs up or thumbs down here on my concepts for trading Kyle Lowry?
I promise I'm not going to be this harsh for this entire exercise.
No, bring it on. Ideas against the wall, and the wall spits them back. That's fine.
Okay. I'm going thumb down here. I just want to throw one stat at you. When Lowry is on the court with Fred VanVleet, Toronto's net rating is +7. That's very good. I believe in the Raptors. I mean, I don't think that they're a title contender, but I do think that, like, nobody wants to play them in round one. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. Like, a healthy Toronto Raptors team with Kyle Lowry, nobody wants to play them.
I feel you, but I also think we're at the stage where nobody fears them either. I think there has been a shift, you know, this year. And I agree with you in theory. Like, there is a best case version that is pretty scary and could pull an upset, but I'm just kind of stuck in the actual reality of who they've been, and I just can't get past how rough it's been, you know? And kudos to their fan base for hanging through it, because it's been a really brutal season, like you described. All right, here's my next one. This guy needs to go, Michael. He needs to be traded. Spencer Dinwiddie, get him out of Brooklyn. It is time. The Nets are obviously all in trying to win the title this year. Spencer Dinwiddie's hurt, so he's got value as a really nice player, fits in a bunch of different ways. I mean, I think that they envision him maybe as a bench scorer if he was healthy, but he's certainly capable of being a starting quality player for a lot of teams out there. It's just going to take some time. They don't have the time. They need to win right now. Blake Griffin needs to win right now, Michael. So they've got to get a piece, you know, they got to get a piece back for him. Now, if Brooklyn does win the title, everything that they've done, from the Kevin Durant master plan to the James Harden trade to this Blake Griffin buyout situation to whatever other buyouts they might come up with over the next couple of weeks, it all gets basically immunity. They, you know, they if they have that ring, they can say it was all worth it. They can kind of rub it in everyone's mm-hmm. face. They probably have more motivation to win this year from a narrative standpoint than any other team out there. So that's why they should be thinking short and not saying, oh, yeah, we're just going to be patient with Spencer Dinwiddie's return, right? If they did win this year, there are like accumulating benefits whereby they become sort of like the Warriors from a couple of years ago, where now everyone wants to join up and gravy train and bandwagon, you know, like the Nick Youngs of the world. We're all just kind of rushing to Golden State. They could be the become the center of the league if they win the title this year and kind of hold that spot for 2, 3, 4 years. That's just what happens when you get a big three as talented as Brooklyn's and everybody starts to realize like, oh yeah, their formula does work. Like, oh yeah, we don't have to worry about Steve Nash's late game stuff anymore because they just win every single game because Harden never loses anymore, right? So trading Dinwiddie for a front court piece or a defensive minded piece to just sort of balance the roster, and you know, if you have to attach some minor future pick, whatever you've got left to kind of make a trade work, I think it makes an awful lot of sense for them. Personally, I would do it 100%. Are you in?
It's pretty funny that you just used the phrase, not the phrase, but just said 100%, because I wrote down here, yes, I would 100% trade him.
Finally, I got one. I'm 1 for 3, Michael. That makes me a Hall of Famer in baseball. In basketball, I'm getting cut, but that's okay. Yeah, so why are you in?
Well, before I even get to that, every time you talk, I just want to say, every time you talk about the Nets like you just did, where you wax on about the possibility of them becoming the center of the league, like, I'm pretty sure I've said this before, but my, like, where I record this pod in my, I guess, one of my bedrooms in my apartment, it overlooks Barclays. So I look at Barclays as you're speaking, and it's just, it's surreal to imagine.
No, Michael, we all know we've never seen a blind spot as big as your blind spot for the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, you never you didn't like the James Harden trade. You're finally getting, you know, excited about a Blake Griffin pickup. I see everybody on Twitter saying, well, yeah, Michael, I think you're a little bit higher on Blake Griffin than I am. No, you've got a dynasty potentially falling right in your lap. And so embrace it, Michael. I mean, you've got the front row seat to history potentially.
I know. It's just, it's stupid because I can't be at the arena and I want to experience that firsthand, which would be fun.
Okay, so I'm going to throw in 2 shots of the Pfizer and and PJ Tucker for Spencer Dinwiddie. Are you in?
Well, so first of all, I just want to say, like, I would have traded, like, I thought Spencer was going to get traded. I saw this coming last year. Like during last season when KD was out and Kyrie was banged up and Spencer was playing great, it just never made sense to me that they would hold on to him, re-sign him, keep Kyrie. Like the pieces, they just never really fit. You had Karis at the time also.
No, he was the he was the Kenny Atkinson of players. You know, it's like, hey, congratulations for what happened 3 years ago. Well, we got to get this guy out of here as quickly as possible. It's going to be great.
Yeah, he was kind of exactly. He was a lingering piece from kind of a different iteration of the team. He's very good, and I guess he's become super underrated because of the injury, out of sight, out of mind. I think when he was healthy earlier this season, it just didn't fit all that well on the court because he's not the greatest spot up shooter.
I think he actually gets underrated by the talent of his own teammates, right? Like everybody looks worse in comparison to the other guys they brought in. And that's like an optical illusion, right? This guy's a really good player and he could help a team. Like I was saying, Houston maybe for PJ Tucker. I know people have thrown that one out there before. But if he's your lead guard, I would rather have a team like for the next 5 years with Spencer Dinwiddie than, you know, guys like John Wall or Victor Oladipo. Like, I don't know where that's taking you, right? I'm not sure Dinwiddie's taking you really anywhere, but he's a start, you know, and you can kind of build around him and go from there. If you want to be a young rebuilding team, you're better off with a guy like that than those other two names I mentioned.
No, 100%. And if you just think about, you know, when D'Angelo Russell was an all-star in Brooklyn that season, Spencer was arguably better, and the difference
was...
He was better.
He was absolutely better. I agree.
Yeah, and the big difference is that Spencer draws fouls like a superstar. And if you can do that as a lead ball handler and you can get to the free throw line, which D'Angelo Russell cannot do, that's a huge, huge boost for your case. So, you know, I have a couple, like, fake just hypotheticals here.
Yes, I love when you do the fake trades. Bring them on.
Yeah, so they're not very sexy, but because it's kind of interesting to find a destination for Spencer. But, like, if I'm Orlando, like, I would throw – and this sounds like a really terrible platter here, but – if you're Brooklyn, I don't even know what you need because you're just basically adding two players and not subtracting anything. But like Al-Farouq Aminu and James Ennis, like if they were to just be in Brooklyn, that helps Brooklyn, right?
That does, yeah. I mean, if you just take those guys, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the beauty for Brooklyn. You know, they took the hit early this season from the depth perspective, and it did seem like when he first went down that could be like really screw up their plans because it happened before the Harden trade, right? And so you're wondering, like, is this going to mess up their other trade packages? Are they just going to seem short all year because they don't really have the depth? Now you're just kind of loading up a little bit. Yeah, I think if I'm Orlando, I'm really interested in that too, because, you know, obviously they're bringing Fultz back. They really believe in Fultz. I don't totally believe in Fultz. I would want to have another plan just kind of there, Fultz adjacent. You know what I mean? Like if it just doesn't quite work with Fultz as a point guard, he can't stay healthy, whatever it would be, I would want a backup plan, you know, at the ready. I think Dinwiddie fits that role for them. And their season's already lost anyways, right? Like they already got half their team out for this year from an injury standpoint. So, you know, Dinwiddie can just join the club.
Yeah, he's a really good lead ball handler, and I think he's bigger than a lot of people think. He's like 6'6" with a pretty good wingspan, so he can play a little bit of defense. I like Spencer in Orlando. I also like Spencer, and I think you'll love this one, in Chicago. Like, just trade him for Thad Young. Like, how does Brooklyn not walk away from that, being like, we just got one of the better bench players in the league this season, and maybe the best bench front court player in the league this, like, I Blake Griffin would not like this at all. But you add Thad Young to Brooklyn, and that's a humongous addition.
That would be a really, really nice addition. I think Thad Young would be the kind of guy in almost any normal year I would expect to get traded, right? But now you've got this lowered standard for the playoff bracket where you can get in as the 9th and 10th seed. So I think the Chicago has a real shot of doing that. And I wonder, does that mean they're going to sit on their hands and not be sellers, right? And if that's how it goes, this entire trade deadline, if teams make those types of decisions, Michael, you and I are just spitting hot air. You know, we're just talking about stuff that will not happen if that's how the executives come at it. But to me, he's a natural piece that should move and would be an awesome fit for Brooklyn, no question about it. All right, anything else on Spencer Dinwiddie? I got the seal of approval there. Can we move on, Judge Pina?
Yes, we may.
Next on the docket, Harrison Barnes. Get this guy out of Sacramento. And here's why. I mean, Sacramento, first of all, their natural inclination after missing the playoffs forever is to try to cling to a chase for the 10th seed for as long as possible. Newsflash, that is not the real playoffs. That is not a consolation prize worthy of you know, of your effort and your time. And also, you're not going to get there. There's other teams ahead of you on the pecking order that are going to stay ahead of you. You just haven't been consistent enough. The defensive stuff hasn't been good enough. And I think this, the chemistry in terms of how these guys play together just hasn't been on the level you need to make a move up the standings in a big-time way. At the same time, apparently, according to The Athletic and Sam Amick, they are cost-conscious right now because they've had to go through, you know, firing coaches in the past. They don't necessarily want to fire Luke Walton because they want to, you know, get their money's worth essentially from that coaching spot. So this could be a financially motivated trade potentially if you're Sacramento, where it's been a tough year. You know, obviously you can't have fans in the buildings like you would hope, and this might be the time to just kind of punt for next season and take your lumps here in the short term. Now, Harrison Barnes, much like Thad Young we were describing earlier, but obviously he's a better player. Like, he helps a lot of teams. Basically, any playoff team, you could plug him in and get quality minutes. Multi-positional defender, scorer, but doesn't need to dominate the ball. Efficient shooting, having a great season just overall. Veteran, high IQ, and I also think just high character, right? And so that's a quick plug and play for any team that grabs him. I know the Celtics fans are out there just thirsting for a player like Harrison Barnes, as well they should be. I like the idea so much, I'm thirsting on the Celtics fans' behalf. So if you're Sacramento, obviously, if you're giving something up, you're expecting to get good, probably draft assets back in this one. But if you're the Kings, Michael, shouldn't they just look in the mirror and say, hey, we're the same old team. You know, we're not going to do it this year. And not only should they consider trading Harrison Barnes, by the way, they should think about trading Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley, and a few of their other pieces as well. But Harrison Barnes is the one I want to focus on because I think he has the most value to a contender. Should they trade him? Should they go ahead and pull the trigger? Should they make Boston's day?
If they don't trade Harrison Barnes, then someone should lose their job straight up. I mean, this is the most obvious candidate on the market right now to move and actually impact the playoff race. And I know that a lot of people listening are probably like, of course the Celtics fan wants Harrison Barnes to be moved, because I do want Harrison Barnes to be moved. He would be a wonderful fit in Boston. But I'm just looking at just like, as you said, he is so plug and play. He is so perfect for anybody. Like Miami, he would change Miami. He would, you know, I tried to get him to Phoenix, like, and I couldn't do it with the trade machine.
Oh, that's a great one. I mean, that's a really, really good fit, though.
Yeah, and there's just, like, any team that is would love to go small and play this guy at the four, where, like, in 2015, when the league was so different then, but everyone talks about Draymond Green going to the five, but the reason they could play Draymond at the five was because Harrison could play the four, and he's just a better player than he was back then, and he knows how to sacrifice, and he's a great locker room guy, and
yeah,
have anything bad to say.
No, I'm with you. The only thing I would add there, the reason why they could play Draymond at the five and Harrison at the four is because it was a way smarter idea, and it just took everybody a while to figure it out, right? I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's funny, once we were watching it, it was like, wow, huh, that does work. But there was so much intellectual resistance to that type of idea back then. You know, it's funny what we know now in hindsight, but it was such a weird look, like, oh, are they going to be able to get away with it? It's like, huh, yeah, no, talent does seem like a good idea. If you can get talent and spacing, that does seem like a smart plan. All right,
yeah.
So did you have a dream destination, or are all roads leading to Boston here?
I mean, Boston, it just, you know, when a player makes so much sense for a particular, like, a trade just makes so much sense that it doesn't materialize. That's kind of,
oh, you don't,
what I fear
you don't want
right
your
now.
Hopes up. Is that it? You're guarding your,
no,
your hopes and dreams?
Just, part of me is like, why hasn't this happened already? Part of me is like, the Kings must be asking for a lot, I would imagine, in terms of draft assets and young players, and I'm sure Boston does not want to part with both. They have the trade exception, so there's the benefit of not having to give up a lot of salary, or I should say Sacramento not having to absorb a lot of salary. You brought up the financial component there. So I think it's just such a perfect marriage between team, player, buyer, seller. Like, if it doesn't get done, I don't even know why it wouldn't. I can't think of any logical reasoning there other than another buyer giving up way more than Boston is willing to, but the fit makes so much sense.
Yeah, two final thoughts on this. First of all, Monty McNair is there in Sacramento. We haven't really seen him do much of consequence yet, you know, because he's still getting his feet wet in that job. So, you know, this will be one test case for what kind of an executive is this guy going to be. Now, he's coming from Houston where they're making trades left and right and they're always playing the asset game. So does he follow that same model? Does he take a different path? And that's one thing to look at and a Harrison Barnes trade. The second one, Michael, I'm curious for your read on this. We heard from Boston's ownership and Danny Ainge this hesitancy to use the trade exception and talking about how maybe they would want to, you know, save it for the future, and, you know, it gets kind of expensive if you use it right now. Was that a negotiating ploy against the Sacramento Kings to be like, come on, guys, this is a lot of money. It is a pandemic. I mean, come on. Are they trying to drive Harrison Barnes' asking price down? What do you think?
I mean, I think you're onto something for sure. Like, if I were Boston, and I've said this before, I would be a little more optimistic about what, like, I don't think we've seen the best of Boston, like, at all.
Totally
this
agree.
Season
totally
for,
agree.
For a variety of reasons. So if I were them, I'd still be very, very, very interested in adding Harrison Barnes. And so, yeah, no, I think you're spot on there.
Do it, Danny. You're disappointing all of us. All right. Next one up here. Al Horford from the Oklahoma City Thunder. I have seen basically no Al Horford chatter, which is weird because he's almost halfway through his contract. This is year 2 of 4. Obviously, it's a big number. He's been helping Oklahoma City. Like, he is a positive player in the real plus minus stuff. They're not a winning team, but they're winning a lot more than people expected. He's played decent amount of minutes. He's putting up numbers that are fairly similar to last year's numbers. It hasn't been this just huge cratering age-related decline. Oklahoma City took him on for the assets, obviously, as always in Sam Presti's case, with the intention of flipping him. He's a pretty easy fit, especially if you have a hole in the middle. And, you know, there are some teams here looking forward in the playoff chase that might have that type of a hole. And OKC, of some of these teams that could try to make a run at the Western Conference's play-in race, I think they're probably the least motivated of any of them to try to do it because, look, they've been to the playoffs in the past, so it's not like a Sacramento situation where they're just desperate. You know, they're clearly in a rebuilding phase, and they have a centerpiece with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who, Michael, you and I do not talk about nearly enough. He has been freaking awesome, and, you know, he's very easy to overlook, but he's had a really, really nice season, and he's looking like a player you can build around for the next 8 years, right? So Horford's not going to be on Shai's timeline. It makes all the sense in the world to just get even a little bit younger. They're clearly going for a developmental approach right now by playing Poku starters minutes since the All-Star break, and somehow Poku is now an NBA player, at least for one night over the weekend. He just went absolutely nuts. So they're clearly in that rebuilding phase, as always. They want to get younger. Horford is kind of an odd fit, sort of like Steven Adams was an odd fit previously, and a few of these other veterans have kind of come and gone through there. Danilo Gallinari. Why is there not more Al Horford trade buzz? And shouldn't a team that just needs a rock-solid front-court defender who's versatile, who's experienced, who's been there before, look to try to grab him if you're loading up to match up with, you know, a really crazy versatile offense with the Brooklyn Nets, or you're trying to match up with a Joel Embiid or some of these other centers that you're going to have to deal with in the playoffs?
I mean, I think the number one reason is it's the contract, right? Like, even though that last year on it is partially guaranteed, it's not whatever, $27 million or whatever was the initial report for that season. I think it's like 14, something like that, which is a little easier to swallow. But I still think that given his age, there's still the stink of that Philadelphia season, the fact that we know this guy has to play center. Like, that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, but it does restrict, I think, a little bit of...
Elton Brand's like, wait a minute, what?
I also have one of my favorite stats of this entire season that I'm about to give you. So Al Horford has played 732 minutes this season, Ben. Can you guess how many free throws he's attempted?
Wow. 19. I have no idea.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You just guessed right.
Are you serious? Yeah. I'm quitting this podcast. It's all downhill from here, Michael. Talk to you later. That's wild.
You seriously were not looking
no,
on his
I,
basketball
I
reference
swear page. To God, I swear on my mother's whatever, you know, I swear on my family. I was not looking at anything. I was just completely guessing.
That is, I mean, yeah, that is the peak. We should Costanza this podcast from.
Holy cow.
There's really no getting.
Now he has to be traded, Michael. I can't do that twice. That's going to be my best party trick of my life.
Yeah. So this guy, I mean, we should go back to just the ridiculousness of that stat. He's a center. He's attempted 19 free throws this season. That's pretty wild. I'm not saying that that should be the single reason why teams are just not interested in him, but I that is a shocking statistic regardless.
Yeah, it is hard to find a fit for him or a landing spot because, you know, I view him almost like in the Serge Ibaka type category of what he's going to kind of, you know, give you in a playoff series where there's probably going to be moments where it works and there's going to be other moments where you're like, we probably got to get this guy off the court now. And, you know, Ibaka's making like less than half of Horford, right? So it's a lot easier to kind of construct a winning roster when you're not devoting that much money to one guy. I mean, you're going to have to send out some real players to bring back Horford, you know, just to even match salary, and that's going to be tricky. So I just wish it was easier to trade him. Unfortunately, I don't know. Did you see any destinations that would make sense for him when you were looking at this, or no?
I mean, not really. Like, you know, you hear these whispers about Boston just because of the trade exception, but like, I don't think that makes a lot of sense personally, given their front court rotation.
Yeah, and if you're doing the priorities, like Barnes is way higher on your priority list than a Horford.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
For what they're missing right now. So I'm with you. And I think if that's the backup plan, I could understand just roll that trade exception over, right? Like, it's probably not worth spending it on Horford.
No.
All right. Well, that idea is going nowhere. I mean, would he be a guy next year who should pull a Blake Griffin and try to get a buyout for, you know, give back a lot of money and just, you know, go have something to show for his season? Because not only has he not been talked about, I do feel like this is kind of a sad end for a very proud, awesome player, you know? And maybe this isn't quite the end, right? There's a little bit of basketball left, but it's, you know, there's just tumbleweeds. I'm getting a lot of tumbleweed vibes from the Al Horford era in Oklahoma City, and it would be nice if he did find a way to ring chase a little bit.
Yeah, it's just nobody's watching the Oklahoma City Thunder. I mean, you said it. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's season is truly ridiculous. Like, absolutely ridiculous, and nobody's talking about him. So, if nobody's talking about the 22-year-old, 23-year-old budding superstar who is super fun to watch and super unique in his aesthetic, then no one's going to talk about Al Horford either.
All right, well, you heard it, Open Floor Globe. This is your challenge. Watch the Oklahoma City Thunder, memorize their free throw statistics, and here we go. We're all going to just be all in on the OKC experience. I actually think Poku's just amazing. Like, he doesn't feel like a real thing. Yeah, it's just very surreal experience watching that guy. I can't get enough. I probably wouldn't have driven to the G League bubble to watch him in person like Sam Presti, but certainly that adds like a real wrinkle to their late season games. They're just a fun team to dial up on League Pass. I'm trying to force myself to watch them a little bit more because they've got some stuff going on there. All right, here's one of your favorites. I think you always want to have trades involving the Orlando Magic. Is it time for the Magic to trade Vucevic, right? And they're in a very similar situation to Bradley Beal. They never want to rebuild fully. Even though they lose so much, they're practically in a perpetual rebuild, right? They've got some fit questions just in terms of, you know, when all these younger guys are coming back around, do they really have this rock-solid lineup that supports Nikola Vucevic? It's possible, but I'm still a little bit dubious because we just really haven't seen a lot of success. They've needed a high-level point guard for years. I'm still not convinced Markel Fultz is that guy. As they go forward, you could really easily envision a younger core that doesn't involve Vucevic because I think so many of their other kind of keeper players are 25 and under, and he's now 30-plus. If nobody else gets traded, it's the same argument I was making earlier around Beal. If this does wind up being a quiet deadline, but you've got a player who's an all-star level guy who could move the needle for some playoff teams, you should be able to get a pretty good package for him. And then you also have to wonder, like, okay, if you do hang on to him, and, you know, it's next year or the following year, how long is he still going to be at a star level production standpoint? Is he still going to be good when your younger players are pulling themselves back together from serious injuries and kind of ready to make a run together? That's an open question to me. Like, I don't know how much longer he's going to be a high level performer, just in part because of the position he plays, the nature of his game. And he is still kind of a one-way player. So what do you think, Michael? Should they be trying to cash out on Nikola Vucevic? It's just been the season from hell from them, from an injury standpoint. Just rip the Band-Aid off and start fresh next year. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it would really be fun if they traded him. I'm not going to lie. I have my doubts that they will because that's just kind of been the MO of that organization. And the way that he's been playing, I can see them being like, if we had a healthy roster, if we had a healthy Jonathan Isaac, a healthy Markel Fultz, a few other pieces around him that are already on our roster, just, you know, 100% next year, like we can make some noise potentially. So I see why they would not want to give him up. And he's on just an absolutely tremendous contract that goes down in payment every year, 26 now, 24 next year, $22 million the year after that. By the way, making $1.5 million fewer dollars than Al Horford this season, which is pretty wild. I mean, he's averaging, what, like 25-12, shooting 41% from the three-point line.
Yeah, now you're just
he's
making
just been an absolute monster.
You're making the case not to trade for Al Horford when you make that comparison. Very well done. So if I gave you the choice, Vucevic or Harrison Barnes for Boston, what would you take?
I mean, Vuce is so obviously the better player, but...
But he's costing a lot more, man, right?
It's a little bit more. It's like $4 million more.
Oh, I guess I meant in the trade package. Like, you know, you could probably
yes, you're right.
Barnes for like fewer assets, and you're just kind of taking on his salary. With Vucevic, like if you're Orlando, you could want a real haul. I mean, you're not going to get like this amazing, amazing package, but you're getting something pretty good for him.
No, you're right, and that's one huge reason why I think Barnes is more attractive to them, and then the other being just their own roster construction, and they love Rob Williams, and Rob Williams has been playing more and more and looking better and better. So
we said that, by the way, when I was yelling about the Celtics. We both agreed, get that guy some more minutes, and sure enough, what do you know, turns around.
Yeah, he's tearing it up. So I can see, you know, the dream team that I would love to see Vuce on right now, but is just it's not possible, is Milwaukee, like in the Brook Lopez role.
Oh, my
just
God. Like, yes, make it happen.
That would be perfect. Yeah, that would be perfect. But I don't know. They obviously don't have the assets to make that type of transaction happen. I like him. You know, we've talked about the Bulls a few times here. Like, if there was some way to do a Markkanen, Carter plus salary transaction. I don't know. I think I don't think that's enough probably if you're Orlando. Maybe you want some picks too, and Chicago probably isn't that interested in that case. But just like all of a sudden if you're Chicago and you add Vuce, I mean that does damage to your cap space going forward, but you have two pretty good all-stars who aren't like totally not on the same timeline, and you still have some young pieces. Pat Williams is still around. Like, I don't know. That would be a really interesting situation for them.
Yeah, Lowry feels very expendable to me for them. Like, I could absolutely see him moving this deadline just because they don't want to necessarily pay him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not that good. That's another reason why he's expendable.
So yeah, I like the Bulls, Celtics, Bucks, even though it's not possible.
So the verdict here, it sounds like your thumbs up.
I think I am. It's very close. I'm 51-49 on this, but man, Vuce is just so good, and like I watch a lot of Magic games for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't know why. And this dude is just like he's been unstoppable. He just like I know he's not like the greatest defender and everything, and the playoffs are different than the regular season. But a pick and pop guy who's that accurate, who can also take you to the block, has plenty of post moves, really good passer.
So here's what we've got to do. We've got to start pumping in pro Dante DiVincenzo, pro Bobby Portis propaganda down there in Central Florida. We need to just do a big ad buy, get them really excited about the Milwaukee Bucks kind of roster scraps so that we can get that dream fit. Man, that would be nice. You got me really, really excited with that idea. All right, let's fly through a couple other here to close this up. Devontae Graham in Charlotte. This seems kind of self-explanatory. LaMelo Ball has just taken over that show. Terry Rozier has had an awesome season. If you had to kind of pick two of those three, feels like you're picking those two, and Graham is now the guy on the outside looking in. There is a case that he would be able to duplicate his production from last year if given a larger role in a different spot. You know, this year it's just natural. There's going to be a squeeze on his touches and his shot attempts, and that's pretty much what he's bringing to the table. So it's not that it's so crowded that it doesn't work, but it's more that you could just balance your lineups, you know, craft an even larger role for LaMelo Ball and go forward with, you know, just a more sensible roster if you move him. You know, he's affordable. He's relatively young, probably not as young as some people think, just because he got a little bit of a later start in terms of his NBA production. But he's rock solid at what he does, and teams love microwave-type scorers like that. You know, if you're Charlotte, you probably also can't pay him with free agency coming up, but he is just an easy guy to move right now because his salary is small. Would you move him if you're Charlotte? with an eye towards the future so you don't lose him for nothing this summer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was actually surprised that you included him here, just because he's not a very sexy name, and I don't think a lot of people are talking about just his the fact that he is a restricted free agent.
Michael,
who makes barely anything.
This is a pretty dorky NBA podcast. The second time you've brought up this concept of sexy. Not a lot of sexy happening here, Michael.
No, there really isn't. But I think, you know, first of all, I'm spot on with. I think that Charlotte should trade him. So I'll get that right off the top. Like, he's a restricted free agent, but I think there could be an offer. You never know where Charlotte's just like, we have no reason to match this at all. Like, I think he's an attainable piece, and teams that have cap space should be interested. And his skill set and his age don't necessarily make him like a lock to go to a contender, because there are some other teams, like we keep talking about, like Orlando or OKC. He'd be really good in OKC. Well, one contender I can think of is Philly, obviously. And just because I don't think that his defense would be as much of a liability in the playoffs, given how they're built. But yeah, no, he's you know, struggled through a shooting slump this season, struggled through some physical ailments. LaMelo, and as you said, LaMelo, Terry Rozier, those are kind of the backcourt in Charlotte going forward. So yeah, I would move on from Devonte, see what you can get for him. It's going to be kind of tough to move him just because of the contract and how little money he makes, but yeah, losing him for nothing would be a bummer.
No, but it's a classic rental situation too. It'd be good for him to get traded, I think. If he could get on a team that's a little bit, you know, has a chance to go a little bit deeper in the playoffs, now he gets a little bit of a showcase before it's payday time. I think that could make sense for him too. So that's one I really actually want to see, and I hope it does. Couple more here at the end. Lonzo Ball, New Orleans Pelicans. He's been playing much better, shooting the ball much better, and he also needs to get paid this summer. And I wonder, is he going to get some premium price, right? Because he's still a name. He still has that cachet. You know, he's a high former draft pick. I'm just worried that his next contract could get bigger than I would want to pay him. At the same time, if you're New Orleans, you could look at it two ways. You could say, well, he fits, you know, decently well with Zion. He's had some moments. He's definitely played better here recently. But as a team, the Pelicans have been really up and down, and I think that's been the story of Lonzo's career too, is just some real swings in inconsistency and focus and just not always kind of there locked in night to night. Are you really willing to commit to him as a core piece for your next 5 years, right? Has he reached that standard or not? I think it's pretty close. I think he's like right on the borderline for them. And when he was playing poorly earlier this season, it was like obvious, you know, at least at that time, that look, he's not at that standard. So he's a little bit of a tease in that sense. So there is some sell high potential here if you move him by the deadline. He would fit in as a 3-and-D guy on a lot of playoff teams. I think it's pretty easy to fit him into that role on just about everyone. He's a much better three-point shooter than I think people kind of realize. You know, and maybe that story has caught up. Like, people get it now. But like last year, for example, he just kind of transformed his ability as a three-point shooter, made himself a lot more valuable on offense. I don't know, Michael, what do you think? Should New Orleans try to sell out on him? I mean, you look at where they're at in the standings. They have a shot at the 10th seed, but it's not great. They're clearly playing for the future, trying to build around Zion. They need a lot more talent than what they've got on hand. You know, their recent moves have been really scattershot. I mean, Steven Adams, kind of questionable decision there, especially to re-sign him to that contract. Bledsoe has just been an outright disaster, and he was always going to be a short-term piece for them. And they got some younger guys coming up too. So Lonzo's kind of caught in the middle of a bunch of different cross storms. Does that open him up for a trade here at the deadline?
You know, I don't want to spoil who our next player is, but I think it makes sense to kind of wrap them both together.
Let's do it. I'm talking about Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram,
yes.
I also would I can't say I want to see him traded, but I do see a strong case to trade him. I think his value as a number two player next to Zion is a lot less than his value was as a number one player. You know, we talk about that inconsistency night to night. I point some of that at Brandon Ingram as well, and just in terms of defensive effort and intensity and just being locked in. I don't think he's that guy every single night. He'll go out there and get his scoring number, but I don't feel like he's leaving his imprint on games as much as he should and as much as we would hope for a player at this age. People love to bring up the fact that he's 23. There's a lot of big impact players who are 22, 23 now in the NBA, and I don't feel like Brandon Ingram has kind of cracked that group yet. I'm also not sure, like, okay, fast forward 2 or 3 years, is he going to be that same mentality type of player that he is right now, or is something going to click and turn him into a fiercer version? Every once in a while, you kind of see that look in his eyes, and it's like, oh, man, this guy is just a monster, and he has huge potential. But there's a lot of nights where you just don't see that, and it's kind of sleepwalking through stuff. I feel like, you know, going back to the idea of trading Beal, if you did put Ingram on this market, you're getting a premium price because just talent-wise, he's much higher and much more interesting with a longer-term ceiling than a lot of these other players that we're describing. So I think it might even be a choice for New Orleans, like who fits with Zion? And you could say, well, maybe Lonzo fits pretty well with Zion, but maybe Ingram doesn't. Do those two guys make each other better? It might be a little bit early to say that, but I'm kind of leaning that direction, at least for right now.
This is not a personal attack on you, so do not take it this way.
Oh, bring it on. But, attack me, Michael.
But no, like, I just think including Ingram straight up, but I'll throw Lonzo in for sure as well. Like, this is just the personification of impatience right here. I don't understand why. I guess I understand why Lonzo's on the list because of
I
the
want results,
situation.
Michael.
Okay, so the New Orleans Pelicans, when Brandon Ingram and Zion are both on the floor, have the best offense in the NBA. They're better than the Brooklyn Nets. Historically, they are, you know, top five offenses the NBA has ever seen. Obviously, defense is a different question. I look at the fact that they are doing that with the roster that they have together, and when one is off the floor, they are not as effective either as individuals or as a team offensively. So I look at that and I look at the roster around them and the pieces and just like how they don't necessarily fit. There's not a ton of shooting. There's not a ton of versatility on the defensive end. The schemes, you know, you could quibble with the schemes as well and how they've kind of played basketball on that side of the floor and just how unsuccessful and inconsistent that they've been. I do look at the age, to be honest with you. I look at, like, if I were New Orleans, I would be petrified of getting rid of Ingram and then never finding a talent on his level before Zion is suddenly like, I can look around a little bit. You know, the clock is on if you're New Orleans, and there's that the parallel with the Anthony Davis situation that I would be worrisome of if I were David Griffin. I already have a ton of draft picks. So I don't need, like, I understand, like, in a vacuum, moving Ingram, you could get a lot back for him. You're not getting a better player. That's just not going to happen. And I don't know how you get necessarily a better fit. Like, I don't agree that he's a bad fit with Zion either, because Zion can do anything, really. Like, we've seen Zion be the point guard, which loosens pressure off, you know, talking about Lonzo for a second, loosens the pressure off Lonzo from just running high pick and roll and putting himself in those situations. I've seen, like, I don't know. I just think that they are a fine enough fit as a trio. And if it doesn't work, then you can move them eventually. But re-signing Lonzo would be one of my priorities, honestly, if I were New Orleans. I don't think that there would be, you know, there could be like a Knicks out there or another team that strikes out and sees Lonzo and wants to overpay. But the way that he's progressed and the way he just plays with Zion, I don't see his value dropping necessarily. So I could always get off whatever that contract is at some point going forward if I had to. And I don't know. I just think that, like, getting too bad with Zion and letting Zion get frustrated could be just a really big mistake. And I'm also just a huge fan of Ingram. I don't think Ingram should be here like at all. I would be like he would be a franchise pillar for me if I was New Orleans.
Well, he would be a franchise pillar for me too if he'd play like it. I think there just needs to be some pressure on him to kind of step up and do it. And I think Stan Van Gundy's been saying that for months. I mean, I know you love him, and I love him in a vacuum and in theory too. He hasn't been that guy this year. Would you agree?
Well, I mean, statistically, he's better than he was last season, despite not making the All-Star team. I think that the roster is, I think there's it's a confluence of two things. One, just the roster is not great. Like, it just isn't. It's lumpy. It's awkward. Two, Zion has ascended to clearly being the number one player on this team, and frankly, he's better than. Like, I know his expectations were through the roof, obviously, and you were leading the charge, but he's better than, like, what I thought he would be this early in his career by a significant margin. I mean,
no, it's weird. He's not really the player that I thought he would be, though. Like, I had pictured this, like, you know, two-way, heavy impact, kind of defense first, get your offense, you know, in the flow of stuff. And instead, it's like, now I'm a 350-pound point guard who's just, like, bowling you over, and he's not really that good on defense. So it's funny, like, in some ways, I'm disappointed in Zion, which sounds crazy because, you know, you're seeing all these stats go around. Like, he's got the most points in his first 60 games since Michael Jordan and all this other stuff. But, you know, maybe it's not disappointment. That's the wrong word. But it is definitely like a...
Just surprise?
Yeah, surprise. Or just like a, yeah, almost a shock factor of like, whoa, like this guy wasn't really at all what he was pitched as. And then in some ways, though, of course he is. The physicality in the paint, we knew that was going to come, of course. And the scoring ability around the basket, the foul drawing stuff, we definitely saw that stuff coming. But everything else has kind of been like, yeah, a real pleasant surprise. And in some cases, yeah, an unpleasant surprise.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I think that is like being the storyline for this team is just Zion just evolving into what he's become has kind of left Ingram in the backseat a little bit. But Ingram's still just an exceptional basketball player. I think there is statistical evidence, but a lot of it for me is anecdotal. And I just watch the Pelicans play. And maybe I ignore some of the bad shots that he takes, those contested twos, which I think he's near the league lead in those shots. Not a great shot. But like when he gets to the rim and he just unfurls his arms and finishes over a contest, like it's like breathtaking. It's just like this guy is unstoppable. Like I don't know how when he puts his head down.
He's so frustrating when he's good because he's awesome when he's good. And then you just don't get that for long stretches. Like you're saying, lots of fat in his shooting diet that needs to be cut out. But what really gets me is the lack of defensive intensity and lack of impact there, right? He should be Paul George. He should be that guy, and he's got a ways to go to get there. But you've convinced me, Michael. Okay, I'm taking the judge's verdict. Fine. We're going to take a patient approach with the Pelicans. I would be looking to try to be a seller potentially if the right deal comes along. But I hear what you're saying with Ingram. But I also think that these two together, Zion and Ingram, to me, they're already on the clock. You know, and I know that's kind of a frustrating conversation for some fans. Philadelphia fans like really didn't like that for years and years about Simmons and Embiid. But I think they've reached that point. It's like they have to prove that they can make each other better and they can drive victories together. I know that Eric Bledsoe is terrible. I watched it for three straight years in Milwaukee. I completely get that they're carrying a lot of young guys and other players where the pieces don't quite fit. But you've got two all-star level talents. You should be winning basketball games if you've got those guys. You should at least be able to get close to 500 with that group. And both those guys have been pretty available this year. And it just night to night, I mean, they look amazing some nights and they just look absolutely hopeless other nights. And that's not good enough if this guy's really going to be a star. All right, that's the end of my soapbox rant there. Last one here for you, Michael. I think it's probably the most obvious one. And I'm curious if you can actually see a trade coming up. Victor Oladipo for Houston. Now, the Rockets have just been in cost-cutting mode the whole way. D'Antoni, Harden, Russell Westbrook, the list goes on. PJ Tucker is probably going to be the next to go. Oladipo was brought back in part because he had that expiring contract, and he's looking for his next home. It doesn't seem like things are going very well for him in Houston. I think kind of, you know, some murmurs about, okay, well, you know, what's the buy-in level like for their main players at this point? It's just been an absolutely nightmare stretch. Long losing streak. Eric Gordon gets injured. PJ Tucker wants to stay home. The list goes on. So Oladipo should be an obvious, you know, pickup for somebody here. But he does have a fairly sizable salary that makes it a little bit trickier. And there's also a big question hanging over it, which is, if you trade for him, do you want to be the team that pays him next? Or is this only like a two-month rental for the playoffs? What do you think? Houston, he makes no sense there. They should not want to be that team that pays him. They should just move forward with a deep rebuild, build through the draft, get as many picks as they possibly can, pray that they get Cade Cunningham. And if you do trade Oladipo, I think it helps that front office and the ownership group save face a little bit, because you can say, well, look what we did. We got even more assets for James Harden. We didn't just get Oladipo and let him walk. So to me, this is the right time for Houston to move him. I'm just curious, do you see any market for his services?
I mean, I agree that they should trade him. It just doesn't make a lot of sense there, even with John Wall's contract. The conversation of are there any suitors is really interesting, because like, what teams out there would want to give anything of value up for the right to pay him a ton of money this summer? I mean, this guy just turned down a 2-year, $45 million extension, which gives you a little bit of a read on what he thinks he's worth. And
yeah, I mean, so maybe it's just a pure rental. You know, maybe it's just a team grabbing him for 2 or 3 months and, you know, try it in the playoffs. You have one more option to go to.
Right, but are you even getting a first-round pick back if you are Houston for that? Like, I don't.
You might. Maybe protected first-round pick. I don't know. I think his trade value is at absolute rock bottom. I would have told him to sign that 2-year, $45 million contract, personally.
Oh.
And if I was Houston, I wouldn't have offered that, by the way.
No, I mean, I agree. If I were him, I probably would have signed that. I think it's telling that he didn't, given, do I really want to spend the rest it's almost the rest of his prime, I guess. Like, he's not super old, but do I really want to be in Houston?
That could have been the hang up, right? It's like, well, I'll take 2 years, 45 from Miami, but 2 years, 45 from Houston. No, come on. That's going to have to be 60, you know, whatever. Like, I think that was the max they could even offer him. But I do think destination sometimes factors into that situation. If you want to sign with Houston, he's probably feeling like the Rockets are going to be an over a barrel. They're going to need to keep him and make a bigger offer this summer, which could potentially happen, but that would be a huge mistake from their standpoint. I really hope they don't do that. I just hope there's a team that comes along to rent this guy for a couple of months and just see what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, the candidates are the teams that can probably just sign him outright, like Dallas or Miami, as you said. Miami, he's been linked to Miami forever. Maybe even the Knicks, I don't know. But the way I honestly see Victor Oladipo's situation, Wesley Morris, the writer for the New York Times, came up with this term for Hollywood actors who sort of, quote, market correct each other, where someone was looking like they were going to get all the roles of a typical typecast situation, and then another actor came along and just stole their thunder. And for me, I look at Oladipo, I think that every team that was pumped about potentially signing Oladipo should refocus now and look at Norm Powell. Like, that's honestly, I think Norm Powell has market corrected Victor Oladipo. Norm Powell, I'd rather have him. He's been tremendous. And he's a low-key, sneaky trade candidate. Should, you know, Kyle Lowry get moved, then there's really no need to keep Norm Powell if you're Masai. So,
and he could get expensive to keep too. So yeah, he should be in that mix as well, as a guy who could get you a first round pick back, you know, to a team that views him as a longer term piece. I agree. That's actually a really nice take. I mean, who would you rather have for the next 3 years, Norman Powell or Victor Oladipo?
No question, Norm Powell.
Wow.
No question. I mean,
poor Oladipo. Like, I mean, yeah, you're saying that Oladipo has been mentioned in these conversations with Miami forever. I kind of feel like that's the same way I've been mentioned in conversations with Rihanna forever. I mean, like, yeah, I think he's interested there, but, you know, come on. What's the hang up? What's the hold up here? I'm kind of with you, because I do think, you know, Powell's going to come at a cheaper price. It's going to be the money ball play, and you don't have to build around him. You don't have the big-time injury concerns that Oladipo has. So, yeah, maybe that's a better way to look at it. If you were shopping right now for an injection just solely for this playoff run, you'd probably rather have Powell than Oladipo too, right?
Absolutely. Like, I just think he's I don't even know if this is that controversial of an opinion, but I just think he's like a better player right now. Maybe Victor Oladipo will, with the benefit of a full offseason, and he can get 100% healthy, and he'll look a little bit more like he was when he made the All-NBA team.
Yeah, it's tough. When you're a guy who needs a change of scenery, you get the change of scenery, and then your own personal scenery doesn't change. That's the problem, right? Then that's when everyone's mm-hmm. like, well, are we really going to give this guy a third chance in 6 months to be the exact same guy that he was? No, I'm with you. It's probably not controversial, but I also think that a player like Oladipo, his name still has a level of cachet, from years past. And, mm-hmm. Norman Powell has just never been on that level. So I do think some people might be surprised to hear that comparison. But I think you're making some really, accurate and astute points. All right, Michael, let's do the final rundown here. We made it through all the lists. I just need your verdicts. Which guys did you actually like, just to wrap this up, did you actually like the idea of trading? I'm going to read the names one more time. Bradley Beal, Kyle Lowry, Spencer Dinwiddie, Harrison Barnes, Al Horford, Nikola Vucevic, Devontae Graham, Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Victor Oladipo. Give me your thumbs up here, just so the Open Floor Globe can know, if they have beefs with your picks, they can email us in at openfloormail@gmail.com. openfloormail@gmail.com to make some counter-arguments to your counter-arguments.
Okay, so just, I guess, running it down in chronological order here. Brad Beal, I'm a no. Kyle Lowry, I'm a no. Spencer Dinwiddie, yes. Harrison Barnes, yes. Al Horford, I don't even know where we came up with Al Horford. I just don't think it's going to happen. But sure, yes, they should trade him. Vucevic,
just trying to get Poku
yes.
some more help, all right? Just
yeah. Moses Brown. Shout out to Moses Brown, too. That dude is an absolute monster. Vucevic, yes, by a hair. Devontae Graham, yes. We got a couple more here. Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram, both are no. Emphatic no's for me. And Victor Oladipo is a yes.
All right, guys, you heard it. Judge Pina weighed in. Let us know your takes. openfloormail@gmail.com. Guys, follow Michael on Instagram and Twitter @MichaelVictorPina. I'm on Instagram @Ben.Golver, on Twitter @BenGolver. You can find our show on Apple Podcasts by searching for Open Floor. That's two words. When you find our page, scroll down. It will say rate and review. Tap 5 stars. It's just that easy to help us spread the word. Michael will be back later this week, I'm sure, with more trade deadline talk. We're getting pretty close. March 25th is the day. Circle it on your calendar. I cannot wait. All right, Michael. Until later this week, I will talk to you.
Talk soon, Ben.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Allo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.